You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and I am glad you are joining us this fine day. We have an outstanding, and I do mean outstanding, show. Coming up a little bit later, we're getting Mike Kozlowski on. We're going to be talking all about ebook and ebook readers. I also have Julian Saunders. This week is the launch of Windows 8. The commercials are hitting the air, and Julian Saunders is going to chat with us about that. And sitting in studio with me is Akash Sablok, who is our gadget guy. How are you doing, Akash?
I'm great. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing just great. And, of course, on the other side of the glass is Art Factoria. How are you, Art?
I'm doing well, Steve. You?
Good. You're planning your trip now. You're getting ready to go to, where are you going, Hawaii?
I'm going to Hawaii.
Is that your first time?
Yeah, I've never been before. Very excited. I'm going to Honolulu and then the north side of the island. My aunt's getting married.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was for a family event like that.
Oh, absolutely.
A destination wedding.
Exactly. A destination wedding, which is what I probably should have had my first time around.
so that nobody would know you were there?
The memories of that.
Because it was awesome.
Yes.
You know, it's been a tough week for a lot of us in the technology. Well, not as much for us in the technology world, but for technology in general. There's this sad, terribly sad story out of the Vancouver area about Amanda Todd, the young girl who sadly took her life. And in a lot of furor about the social media impact and the role social media played in the tragedy. And Akash, what was it you mentioned to me? What was the first thing your dad said?
You know, my father says, well, you know, you got to make sure that your boys, I have two young boys, and they said that make sure that, you know, they're not on Facebook. And I said, well, you know, I mean, they're five and
yeah, they're young.
They're young, but eventually they will be.
But I think it's interesting, the opinion that your dad came out with immediately, an intelligent, articulate man. I've met your dad. He's definitely with it. I think it's that a lot of people have the exact same first impression, that social media is at the root of this, and this tragedy would not have happened without social media being a contributing factor.
Oh, I think you're right. I think it is a contributing factor. I don't think it is the factor.
No.
And I believe that all we can do right now with our children is educate them and monitor and keep an eye on what they're doing.
Here's the comment, the only comment that I'll make on this, and it's not in any ways meant to lighten the gravity of what happened, but social media is not at the root of this. This is how kids are being raised. This is attitudes. If social media wasn't there, this tragedy would have probably occurred, because bullies will be bullies in a variety. They've been there since we were kids. They were there before. They'll be there after. They use whatever forum is available to them. And the fear that I have is people will disengage from what's happening in social media because of something like this. And I don't think that's the answer. You know, it's set against this tragedy. I just want to fill you in on a little story, because last week I attended a memorial service of a woman who passed away from cancer. She was a big part of the theater community in Vancouver, which I'm also part of. And her life was the theater community. She was all, that was her family, was the people in theater in Vancouver. And she had cancer for, I'm thinking it was 8 years that she had her struggle with cancer. And she was a social media diva. She was online on Facebook. She had a blog. Now, it enriched the years that she had left in her life rather than taking things away. So this, I think nature is a got a great, I think social media follows the rules of nature. There's positives and there are negatives. It's neither good nor bad. It just is, and it's how we use it that determines whether or not it enriches our life. With Cheryl, what happened was, because she was very forthcoming in Facebook and in her blog about what was happening with her situation, we all knew. So when we saw her, you know how it's awkward if you meet a friend who's struggling with some disease and you don't know whether you should talk about it or not, and it's the elephant in the room and you just don't quite know how to handle it? Because she was able to frame everything that was going on in her life on Facebook or in her blog, all of us that saw her, when we saw her, we were up to date, and we knew that it was an okay topic of conversation, but we also knew what the current status was. So we could ask her a question about it and didn't feel, there was never that awkwardness with her. And I think that that's a real blessing for her friends and for her, because A, she felt engaged with them through the entire process, right? Yes. Up to the very end. She was getting a lot back, and we were also getting a lot from it as well. So set against the backdrop of this tragedy, we have to also understand that social media can also provide great benefit.
Yes.
And it's how we use it. So disengagement from it as a result of something like this is not the answer.
Social media, I believe, is just one more form of communication, and how you use it is up to you.
Yeah.
And I had a very similar situation. A good friend of mine in Toronto passed away on Sunday from cancer. His was pretty quick. And the benefit of social media we had with him was that I was able to communicate with him, see him, what's going on with him. He's in Toronto. I'm in here. And when he did pass away, the post on his Facebook wall brought his friends, family, all of us closer together, even though we're miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a beautiful thing for his family to hear what everybody had to say.
It's just the next phase in how we communicate as a species.
Yes.
To a certain extent.
Yes.
Let's take a break, Art, and then we'll come back and we'll talk gadgets. It'll be a little bit later for the rest of today on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
As we've already mentioned, Akash Sabalak is with us, and Akash is my gadget guy, and he's all about gadgets. Where did your passion for gadgets come from?
You know, I started in the early 90s actually writing about cars.
Yeah, that's right. You used to be with Driver's Seat.
Yes, I was on Driver's Seat, and I still write about cars, and it is definitely a passion of mine. But something happened in 97, 98 where all these gadgets started coming into cars, and cars would have little mini computers in them, and it was just a mixture of both things happening together. And my passion for gadgets tagged along with my passion for cars. So
that's right. And now that I'm recalling, I think the very first project we did together was I was writing a piece, and you co-wrote the piece for me on technology for cars.
For cars, yeah.
That's right.
Massaging seat, I remember. Yeah.
He had the massaging seat in the back of the Bentley or something like that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, wow. So this is now where we paint a picture of all these wonderful gadgets on radio so we can tell you exactly what they look like and what they do.
So, well, I'm gonna try giving a little bit of help to parents out there and even grandparents to see what you can get early shopping ideas here. You know, it is October, I know, and Halloween's up first, but you know, let's
Black
face
Friday
it.
Is not that far
not
away
that
or
far.
Whatever that day is when everybody shops like crazy in the state. So yeah, it's time to start planning.
Hey, if Costco can have their Christmas trees out in July, we can do this in mid-October, right?
Now, the first thing we're going to start with is this monstrosity which is standing next to me. Now, I've got new nieces and new nephews all over the place in my family, and I am stunned by the technology that's gone into strollers. No more are we talking about the $15 umbrella stroller that we used to put our kids in. What
definitely
the heck?
Not.
This thing looks like the lunar rover.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, it could say NASA on the side and you wouldn't mind it. This is from 4Moms. It's a company called 4Moms. It actually started by 4Moms many years ago. And this is the Origami stroller. This is their first stroller. They've made a couple of cool products before this. Let me tell you the basic what it looks like. It looks like an alien pod with four wheels. It has headlights.
It's got headlights.
It's got a little display that tells you the temperature, your speed, your distance traveled.
It's got a little computer here. And it's got dual cup holders.
Very, very important. And now the magic button, there's a small dial button at the top.
I see
you
that.
Rotate it. The screen, the light goes on blue. You push the button and it's self-folding.
It did. It folded up.
It folded by itself.
You should have warned me.
Well, hey, you know, that's the surprise. Put it back down again. Rotate it again. Rotate the knob. Put it back on the ground and push the button, and it will pop up by itself. And you know the cool thing about it, when it's folded, it folds pretty tiny.
That's ridiculous.
It is heavy. There's no doubt about that. It is quite heavy when you know, picking it up off from the ground and putting it back on. It's a little heavy.
It's like it weighs 50 pounds. No, no. 45 or 50 pounds.
Nice curls there, Steve.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, but it's tough. And it does fold pretty compact. So, you know, you can put it in the back of a compact car. You don't need an SUV or anything like that.
It seems like it's very suspended. So is this okay? Is this good for people, I was going to say women, but I don't want to be gender specific, people who want to take their infant for a jog?
Oh, definitely. Jogging stroller. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't take it on gravel or anything like that, but sidewalks and everything, you're absolutely fine. And in fact, when you're pushing it, it will actually charge the battery that's built into it, or it comes with an optional adapter.
It's
but get
a
this.
Hybrid.
Get this. Yes, exactly. It's got a USB port. to charge your cell phone while you're out and about.
Also, you can charge your phone while you are. Now, the computer that's on it, is it a GPS? Is it tracking?
No, it's not a GPS, but it does tell you the temperature. It tells you your speed. It's got an odometer. It tells you how much you've traveled. Mm. And, yeah, it's lit up
as
well.
That's disappointing.
The hey, you've got a phone to do that. How many GPS devices do you need?
True, true. But they don't have a mounting place for your iPhone, do they?
No. Well, you can put it into one of the cup holders.
Yeah, so. Into the cup holders. Yeah. That's okay. It's semi-acceptable. But now, I remember being in a mall a couple of months ago, and I was watching a young man buying a stroller from the stroller sales guy who was meeting him in the mall. And they were talking thousands of dollars people can spend, which was unbelievable to me. I was like, I was gobstopped. Is this thousands of dollars?
No, it's not bad. It's $899. And
that's not bad by today's standards.
It is actually not bad because, I mean, you look at some of the
once you pay tax, it's $1,000, and you're saying that's not bad by today's standards.
For a stroller, definitely. I mean, some of the high-end strollers that you see, you know, the Hollywood stars walking around, and those are $2,000 or $3,000. And, you know, for us, when we were buying strollers for our kids, the most important thing was maneuverability, how much it can fold and compactness, and just overall usage. You know, really, you need to take it for a test drive.
So the question is, does this make you want to have more children, Akash?
Well, I have a 1.5-year-old, so we are test driving it with him. So, yes, and he loves it, and we love it. And it actually has a sensor in there, so if you've got your child in there, there's no way it's going to fold with a child in it.
Oh, that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's a pretty good thing to have, yes.
So the Four Moms...
Origami.
Origami, it is a hybrid... self-folding, strolling monstrosity.
Yes.
Okay. What's up next?
Well, you know, let's since we're already talking about kids, I've got a tablet here. It's a 7-inch tablet from a company called Vinci. And it's 7 inches. The actual screen itself is 7 inches, but it's surrounded by a nice red rubber bumper. The red obviously looks cool. The rubber bumper is great because kids will eventually drop it. And it runs on the Android operating system, but it's got features designed specifically for young children. And it's an education tool. So you can actually lock it as an adult. You can lock it so they can't load anything else or do anything else. It's a regular Android tablet. So, you know, it has a camera and it uses the Android operating system. But it's got software and icons and programs built into it designed specifically for kids. Like, for example, a day at the zoo, you touch on things. So if you touch on a giraffe, it'll tell you about the giraffe, you know, those sort of things.
So interactive books.
Exactly. And it comes with it, and there's tons and tons of games built right into it, and you can always download more if you want to.
So this is the next version of the kind of the Leap computer or the small educational computer designed for 3 to 7-year-olds, 3 to 6-year-olds, entertainment and education combined.
Well, you know, like my iPad especially, I'm sharing time with my kids, and you know, it's like I have to drag it out, you know, pull it out of their hands.
And this looks better for teething children than
the
iPad.
Yeah, you could definitely grab the side of it if you needed to.
Yeah, it looks like they can chomp down on it. And what is it range in price?
You know, there's a 5-inch version that's about $159. The 7-inch starts at about $179, and then you add the Wi-Fi into it, and you're at $199.
So that's it tops out at $199. Where do you find those?
You can get it online, Vinci Tablet.
Okay, Vinci Tablet. Okay, the Vinci Tablet.
Yeah. So, again, with the kids here, I've got the Works toy, that's W-O-R-X, and several versions. I've got a car here, which is called the Speedster. They've got a fire engine called the Torch. They've got a helicopter, a spaceship, and basically they're interactive toys. Designed, again, for younger children. They've got 4 or 5 buttons on it. It comes with a book. So as you read the book, you know, the book in this particular case is a racing car, so it talks about the engine, the steering wheel, the headlights, the car racing through. There's buttons that you program on here. So if, for example, I would hit 3 buttons and hit the start button, and then now it turns on the steering wheel, and you see the steering wheel lights up. And then you can hear the engine, you can hear the gas pedal, you can hear the brakes and all that sort of stuff. It's an interactive toy that works well with the book. So you read the book to the child, they see the pictures, they push the buttons, and then they can interact with the whole process.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Fire truck, car, what else?
Fire truck, car, helicopter, spaceship, motorcycle, they've got a few.
And who's the publisher?
It's Works Toys.
Works,
W-O-R-K-S.
W-O-R-X. Toys. Works. Okay, well, that's an interesting one. It's kind of a funky looking car.
Yeah, not bad. They're in the 30-40 range, so.
Oh, it makes lots of noise as I wheel it around, too.
Yes, and luckily there is an off button, so you can...
Let's use that now.
You step on it, and one in the morning when you're grabbing a glass of water,
No kidding. Okay. You know, let's stay on the toy theme, and I see you got a helicopter over there.
Yeah, so Air Hogs by Spin Master, one of the most popular toy companies here in Canada, in fact, a Canadian company. They've got this amazing RC, tiny little thing, and you know...
RC stands for radio controlled?
Yeah, so this is a helicopter. It's called a Heli Replay. It's only about, I'd say, about 6 inches long, tiny little thing, very light, charges from the charger, so from the remote itself.
Okay.
So you can use the included remote, or there's an adapter that you actually stick into your iPhone. You plug it into the headphone port of your iPhone, and now your iPhone becomes a remote.
Okay.
You download the free app. You can control it using the iPhone, or you can use the tilt feature in the iPhone and control the helicopter. Mm. Now, a lot of these previous versions of this, I would crash it into the wall so easily.
You know, I bought my brother one of these, and he started flying it in the Caribou. At our property, and it started flying away over the trees, and he couldn't get it back. And it just last we saw it was flying over the horizon, and we never found it. That was it was the one and only flight of Rick's helicopter.
There you go. And some black bear out there is playing with his helicopter right now. So this one actually has a built-in gyro, which really helps in the stability of it.
So it's easier to fly.
Much, much easier to fly. Now the replay version of it is what that means is that once you've taken a flight, you've flown through, you've gone through a room, indoor, outdoor, whatever, hit the replay button, and it will duplicate what you've just done.
Oh, okay.
So very cool to see. It's sort of an instant replay.
Now, these have been really popular for a little while, these little radio control helicopters. And is the price coming down?
Yeah, you know, this unit's about $45, so it's quite reasonably priced. And the nice thing about it is that it does say 12 years plus for age, but, you know, I've seen kids that are 8 or 9 years old play with these, and they pick it up pretty quick.
Good. Yeah. Okay, that looks like a good one for Christmas.
Yeah. So something for a little bit older kids, if you're into music, as I am, and I know you are, the Sonos system from Sonos.com, S-O-N-O-S.com. Now, it is very similar to Apple's AirPlay, but this is a proprietary system that they have for themselves. So you can start off by putting a speaker or even a bridge system. Now, the bridge, what that does is basically connects to your home internet. Mm-hmm. You can hardwire it into your internet. Once you have the base installed, the base units, the bridge is only about $45, and that creates 150-foot range.
Okay.
So you've got the bridge hooked up to your internet. 150 feet away, you can put a speaker. So here I've got, in the studio here, I've got a small speaker, which is about maybe 10 inches by 5 inches, and it's a Sonos Play 3 speaker. Here, we'll just turn the car off.
The car is making
I told you, 1 a.m. on your foot in the kitchen. So the Sonos Play 3 speaker, there's a Play 3 speaker for smaller rooms, there's a Play 5 speaker for larger rooms, and now they've just introduced a subwoofer. 10-inch subwoofer, extremely loud, extremely nicely designed, and that's for home theater rooms. Okay. Now, the nice thing about it is if you've got a Play 3, you've got your bridge, you've got a Play 3 150 feet away, that Play 3 speaker now extends your range another 150 feet.
Okay, this is a question that I have right now. So let's say that, and this works similar to AirPlay, so your iTunes... Can you send this music from your iPhone or anything?
Your iPhone, your iPad, your desktop.
And is it going through the AirPlay system or is it another app that you have to load?
No, it's going through another app.
Okay.
And in fact, that app, the Sonos app, will actually pull from your iTunes library. It'll play RDO, it'll play Rhapsody, it'll play basically almost any streaming music service.
And anything they have online as well.
Yes.
So anything. Okay. So now the question is, you wake up in the morning and you turn your alarm clock radio, which would come through in your Sonos, I imagine.
Yeah.
And now you're going into the kitchen to make coffee.
Yes.
Does the music transfer with
yes.
you, or can it play in both places at the same time?
Now, this is the beauty of it. So say you've got four different speakers in the house.
Yes.
You've got one in the den, one in the master bedroom, one in the home theater, one in the rec room, or one in the kids' room. You can say, the one in the kids' room, I want this music playing. The one in the master bedroom, I want this
You can
music.
Have different music.
Different music to different speakers.
Shut up.
Yes.
That's because you can't do that with AirPlay.
No, you cannot.
I don't even think you can share it between two speakers with AirPlay.
No. No, you can. You can send to two different speakers. But the only problem with the limitation with AirPlay is that, yes, it's on or off. With this, you can send to different rooms, different channels.
Okay, I'm liking this. So how much is the whole rig here? By the way, you can't leave with this one.
That's staying here. Okay, well, Merry Christmas. the bridge itself is about $45. The Play 3 speaker is about $399. Yeah, they start to get pricey when you get into the speakers.
That hurts.
But it's all in one unit. In fact, you can hook up the Play 3 directly to the internet, and that's it. You don't even need anything else.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, they start to get pricey.
Because AirPlay docks are like you can start getting for like $130, $140.
I absolutely agree with you. But, you know, the sound quality in these, it's a high-end speaker with this technology
built
in.
So Play 3 is for small rooms, Play 5 is for big rooms?
For larger rooms, yes.
And how much is the Play 5?
The Play 5 is about $599.
Wow.
And then you have the sub, which is about $799, I believe.
That's for your home theater system.
That's the home
theater.
But
if you've already got it. Now, does the bridge allow you to tie the Sonos system into your own home theater system?
Yes. So what you can do is the bridge, there is another connector. So there's the Sonos Connect,
okay,
which allows you to use your regular stereo system, the output of that into the Connect,
okay,
now connecting you to the Sonos system. So if you, say, for instance, want to set up a wireless speaker system in your home theater room, you don't have wires by your screen or anything, you leave your stereo behind you, you connect it to the Sonos Connect system, you put the speakers in front wirelessly, and now you can run those speakers in front of you by the screen from your stereo that's sitting behind you.
But what about feeding from your iTunes library into your home theater system?
Yes, you can do that, definitely. Oh, into your home theater system?
Yeah, so that's
coming
through.
To run the speakers of your home theater system? No, it's only the other way around. You can use your home theater system as a source.
See, there is still not a perfect solution then, is there? Because AirPlay will allow you to play it through your home theater.
There's a lot of receivers actually out now. I've got a really, really nice receiver at home, the Rotel receiver, which has AirPlay built into it.
Yeah, a lot of them do,
And that's the receiver.
And
so
you can get an Apple TV and do it that way,
You can do it through Apple TV as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I still don't have my perfect solution. Let's move along. But I do like the Sonos. I do like the ability to be able to say what music's going to play in what room.
The sound quality is incredible.
But at $400 per room, that's getting pretty pricey.
You know, I mean, well, a decent speaker these days, and it's a loud speaker. It looks pretty tiny, but it is a very, very clear speaker. It's got fantastic range on it, fantastic bass on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I can get a price. Okay, moving on.
All right. So going back to, we were talking about new technology, going back to
you're
a little
really
bit.
You're really going to show
me this? I'm going to show you this because you know what? There is definitely a demand for this. In fact, I use it. Swiss Voice, it looks like one of those, it's a shape of a classic handset, telephone handset. It does have a new design. You know, it's like a hollow design on the side of it. You can see right through it. But a traditional earpiece and a mouthpiece on it. At the other end is a 3.5 millimeter jack, which will hook up into almost any cell phone. In fact, this particular model from Swiss Voice, the ePure wired version, actually has this button on it to optimize it for if you're using it with an iPhone. So you hook it into the headphone jack of your iPhone, and now it becomes your handset. So the benefits, of course, is you can leave your cell phone on the table. You're not putting it up against your ear.
Yes.
You can control it from your thing, from your handset. The handset will answer and hang up calls.
Yes.
There's a volume control button on it. And it's just, you know, especially if you're the type of person that, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, but you can, you put your phone sort of sandwiched between
your ear. Crooked in your neck.
Yeah, exactly. This is much better than having a tiny little cell phone against it.
I've got one of these at home. I've got the other one, the older one, that looks like a classic handset. It's just gathering dust.
You know, when I'm at my desktop, I use it because I have my office desk phone and now I have this phone and I'm actually using it because I receive a lot of phone calls on my cell phone during the day. And now I have
your phone's ringing.
Ah, there you go. I have a call.
Don't take the call.
I'm not going to take the call.
How much is that?
You know, this is about $35.
Okay, and I'm telling everybody that's listening, do not get this for me.
Okay. Shoot, now I have to go shopping again for you. What do I do?
It's okay.
You're making it harder.
The Sonos
something
will
Sonos.
Work for me.
Yes, that's what I figured. I can get you a Sonos sticker. I can probably afford that for you.
Yeah.
All right, so if you're going for a slightly bigger gift for somebody, Intel has launched what's basically their Ultrabook line, and they've collaborated with manufacturers, so HP, Sony, Acer, Asus, they've collaborated with manufacturers to create the Ultrabook line, and that's basically a design of the whole system from beginning to end. They're very, very thin, and the screens are quite thin as well, and the whole process, the whole application, the memory, everything, screens, all integrated to create the Ultrabook line.
Okay.
So when you're buying from one manufacturer or the other manufacturer, you know that you're going to get a consistency across the board here.
And so this is timely as Windows 8 is finally coming down the pipe.
Exactly. Yes. Very, very helpful. Screen size, 13-inch, 15-inch, very light, very thin, and great battery life, actually. You know, I've been able to squeeze about 8-9 hours out of this.
Yeah, so the bar has been raised, certainly, as far as notebooks goes. The price of these typical Ultra Notes?
They start at about $700.
So they're half the price of the iBooks, MacBooks Pros.
The MacBooks, which is really what they're actually. And they're a little bit pricier than the netbooks that we had.
Now, solid-state drives or hard drives?
This has a solid-state drive.
How big are the drives?
This one has 128 gigs. Yeah.
Still pretty small.
Small,
that's the only thing. Okay, nice looking Sony. It'll have all of, obviously Sony's proprietary webcam and all that kind of stuff.
Definitely, yes. Got it. Yes. So little connectors, little fun thing. I know this is for the geek in me that likes these things. This is the AVQ little cable. So I have a micro USB and a mini USB connector. It's about 5 inches long. It's got a USB port on one side and a micro USB or mini USB port on the other side. It looks like a pen, really.
Yeah.
It's like a flat pen. And get this, it's even got a little pocket hook.
A little clip. So this is ideal to have in your kit if you need a charger or if you need to connect, mainly for charging your devices like your Bluetooth headset or your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're traveling, you need to, you know, back up your phone or whatever, or you know, if you have your digital camera or anything. Nice little clips to have. Just throw it in your suitcase. They're fun little things here. So going over to the iPhone and the iPod Touch. So what Crayola and Griffin Technologies, one of my favorite companies, they have got together to call what's called a case creator. So I have here in front of me the iPod Touch. So this is for the fourth generation. And it's a really nice iPod Touch case. And basically what it is the case has a layer in it with a plastic cover, and it comes with pre-size cut labels. And you basically create your own case. So you print a photo. Mm-hmm. And it tells you the size, and you know you can make the specs and everything. And your photo goes into the back of your iPod. So now you've personalized your case.
So it's like the old customized mugs and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Now it's your case.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
that's a cute idea.
Especially for a kid, you know, it's nice. It's a fun
great
little
Christmas
thing.
Christmas craft, something that they can do for their parents. They could buy their dad an iPhone case and put their picture in it. That's
exactly.
A super thing. How much is that?
Oh, these are $20.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, it's a
fun, I like that.
Yeah, this is a fun little gift. That's, you know, these are things that, you know, and you can keep updating it as the seasons go along. So.
Yep.
All right, and going back again to kids, and this, you know, is the season of flus and colds.
Mm.
I've got bronze thermoscan digital thermometer.
Oh, that's a thermometer. See, I thought it was one of those ear hair removal devices.
Well, I'm sure there's a model that's available for that as well. This one particularly checks the temperature. It actually looks like a small razor.
Looks like a little hummingbird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the fifth generation.
But that's, so it's a digital thermometer. You put it in the ear, you get the temperature right away. No fussing with the kid.
Yes, it comes with disposable little covers on here.
Yeah.
And you put it into your ear, 3 seconds, you got a very, very accurate scan. And very, you know, nice. And that's the thing with little kids. I mean, they won't stand more than 3 seconds of something like this here. And it has a memory too. So it'll tell you the last 5 temperature scans, which is helpful. And especially and this is what we do. My wife's really good with this sort of stuff. She logs everything. She gives them Tylenol, she logs it. Takes the temperature, she logs it. And I tell you, we go into the doctor, it's very helpful for the doctors to see what their temperature was and when it was. This will help you do that.
What does that thing cost?
This is a bit pricey. It's about $79, $89.
That's not too terrible.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But, you know, it is a peace of mind, and it is one of the easiest ways to get an accurate temperature reading. Because you try that thermometer underneath the arm.
Oh, no.
No, that ain't going to work.
Underneath the arm? No. Old school, buddy.
Yeah. It's just not going to work.
Okay, last piece.
All right, so with the iPad 2 and the iPad 3, a company called BookPad, B-O-O-Q, mm-hmm. and then Pad. So this is their BookPad, so Book is the company. And, you know, this is probably, I think, one of the most stylish covers for an iPad that I've seen in a long
like
time.
I like that pad.
And
I've been looking for one just like this, as a matter of fact.
Well, there you go. Merry Christmas.
That I can have a... Actually, not quite exactly. This has got it's got notepaper on the side in the iPad here. I want one that has credit card slots and stuff like that.
You even carry your credit cards with your iPad?
Oh, no. I was looking for the iPhone.
There isn't one available. I will bring that on the show for you next time.
Okay.
But this particular pad, this particular case, it's a very nice texture case. It actually looks like a notebook on the outside. Mm-hmm. You put your iPad on the left-hand side. It slides right in really nicely. So the iPad 2 or the new iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And on the right-hand side, you have a regular notepad with a pen holder. And, you know, that... I'm a bit old school. I do like to write sometimes on a notepad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so nice to have that ability to do that. And, you know, it's nice to have the iPad on the left-hand side and an actual notepad on the right-hand
and
side.
And then also a place to put your pen stylus.
Yes.
The combination pen stylus.
Yes, which I actually happen to have one right here.
Yeah, I use one as well.
Yeah,
perfect.
No, they're fantastic.
Yeah, and I just slipped my iPad into it, and that's nice.
Pretty compact.
The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't give you a nice stand to work on like the other ones, but still.
Yep.
It's for a different style of work, and the ability to be able to write down notes, I think that is awesome.
Definitely.
Akash, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Akash Sablock. He is my gadget guru. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
As promised, and it has been far too long, Mike Kozlowski joins us again. He of GoodEReader.com. How are you doing, Mike?
Not too bad, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing just terrific. Lots of news in the tablet and e-reader and market. And our friends Kobo, they've been they haven't been sitting on their laurels.
Yeah, idle hands don't make an idle mind, and Kobo has definitely released two new devices that are available at Chapters. You have the Kobo Mini and the Kobo Glow.
Okay, now I haven't looked at them yet. So fill me in, first of all, on the Glow. What's the Glow?
Okay, well, traditionally, e-readers, you need ambient light. You need a lamp on. You need, you know, some sort of light, because traditionally e-readers do not have any type of backlit technology. So what Kobo's done is they've developed an e-reader that allows you to read in the dark. And it's not like the iPad or tablets where the light is emitting in your face. It's called front light technology. So basically the light is evenly distributed across the screen by little LED lights that are making the screen illuminated by inside the bezel.
So the lighting, now the inside the bezel technology has been used by several manufacturers for navigation, where it registers where your finger is by cross-referencing it from inside the bezel. Is this similar to that technology?
Well, it's similar in the respects that it has infrared touch, and the front lights actually appear on the bottom and sort of come out illuminating the screen. So again, I mean, it's way easier on the eyes to read on devices like this, because you're not getting that sort of glare from behind the screen.
No direct
sort of
light
hurting your eyes. Yeah.
Okay. So that's, now have you tried it out in the dark?
Yep. We have run an extensive battery of tests on our YouTube channel, and it's at youtube.com/goodyreader, and you can basically compare it to book lights that you can buy at Chapters for normal e-readers that don't have any lights. So it's pretty positive. We found from like our tests that really there's really no comparison with like all these third-party accessories, whether they're official from Kobo or whether you're getting aftermarket type book lights or cases that have lights built into it, say off of an eBay.
Okay, so the Kobo Glow, is how much of a premium does it cost over top of the normal Kobo?
You're looking at about $139, and I believe the normal Kobo Touch is around anywhere between $89 and $99. So you're paying basically about like a $30+ premium for it.
Does it affect battery life much?
Actually, it's kind of funny that the battery life on the Glow is actually a little bit better than the Kobo Touch. It also has a faster processor, more RAM, and more internal memory than any of the previous models. So,
so it's not just a touch with lights around the edges. It's a different box.
Yeah, it's done away with the home button, which many users have found very prevalent in Kobo's prior releases. So it's a full touchscreen e-reader. It's very powerful, and, you know, in the past, Kobo suffered from some sluggish devices.
Yes.
Especially their first few offerings. When I used this, it was a night and day difference between their earlier devices and the cutting edge, which is, they just came out in Canada roughly about 2 weeks or so ago now.
Okay. Now, Kobo's also got, they're jumping on the mini bandwagon.
Yeah, they have a 5-inch e-reader that's also a touch screen. No expandable memory, so you're kind of limited to your 2 gigs of internal memory. Although it's good, it has Wi-Fi, so you could download ebooks and all that jazz from their main website. And it's fully featured, so if you have used the Kobo Glow or the Kobo Touch, the interface is exactly the same. You know, you're not really sacrificing a lot in terms of a smaller screen. And many people find that with a 5-inch screen, it's very lightweight and portable. It fits literally like in your jeans back pocket or in the side of your, you know, sports coat.
So the normal e-readers from Kindle and Kobo, they're 7-inch devices, am I right?
No, traditionally e-readers are around 6 inches. So this is about an inch smaller.
Inch smaller, okay.
You know, and using a lot of 6-inch devices over the years, it's for myself, that is a huge adjustment going from like a 6-inch to a 5-inch. I find it, the screen's almost a little bit too small.
Okay, because I'm wondering about that. And you're a young man. I'm not so young, and so my vision not quite as good. Now, why is the screen too small? Is it because the text gets smaller, or you don't get as much, or it's just weird?
Well, I think a little bit of everything. I think they really wanted to appeal to, you know, like a $79 price point.
Okay.
So you can pretty well buy this as a stocking stuffer, as a really cost-efficient gift for mom for the holidays, or, you know, for like a family member that's maybe never had an e-reader before. It's extremely user-friendly. You know, we put it in the hands of people that have never used an e-reader before, and they found that, you know, turning pages, increasing the size of the font, especially important because if you have a 5-inch device, the text by default is pretty small, so there is a lot of flexibility to change the font type as well as the font size.
Okay, so that's the Kobo Mini. Now, along that the same vein, Apple has announced that their new tablet, their new iPad Mini, or at least all rumors are that it's going to be announced before the end of the month.
Yeah, they actually sent out the press invitations today, so we had received invitations to go check it out. Like Apple usually does, they don't really say officially what's going to be announced, but we've seen pictures of supply chains and, you know, all sorts of leaks for about the last 3 or 4 months, and it really looks like the Apple's poised to release a 7-inch tablet to compete with the likes of the Kindle Fire, the Kobo Arc that's coming out soon, the new Google Nexus tablet, and, you know, most tablets out there are 7 inches, so they're definitely going to put all of those devices on notice.
So that's going to be Apple's announcement coming up at the end of the 23rd of this month. And any idea how much the rumor mill is spinning out, how much this new tablet's going to cost?
Well, I do think that there's going to be, like, different memory types of sizes, you know, like traditional iPads where you go to like the 16, 32, 64, and then Wi-Fi, 3G. I really do think that they're really trying to make the entry point along the lines of about $199 to about $249.
That should be pretty interesting. And it'll be interesting to see if the 7-inch device does better as an e-book reader than the full-size iPad.
Well, that's what actually everybody's saying, is that 7-inch devices are almost indicative to a better reading experience, whether you're reading e-books, magazines, newspapers. For one, it's more portable. I mean, we both have iPads, and it's good, but it's not exactly very portable.
It's too heavy to read comfortably with.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think a 7-inch device inherently would be a little bit lighter, which means that it would be a little bit more portable, but you tap into that rich Apple ecosystem. So, you know, Kindle, Kobo, iBooks, you know, you do have a wide array of options for ebooks, and then you have, you know, press readers, Zinio, the Vancouver Sun, they all have apps consume a lot of things.
You've got Apple's whole app ecosystem. Now, speaking of ecosystems, Amazon is not sitting still. Although the Kindle Fire hasn't done as well in the marketplace as perhaps they'd hoped, but they're charging ahead and releasing some new devices.
Yeah, well, Amazon's done a lot of things. They've released the Amazon Kindle Paperwhite, which is very similar to the Kobo Glow in the respect that it's a front-lit e-reader. It's very economically priced at about $129 or so. It's only in the States right now, but it should be in Canada, at least through third-party, you know, eBay and websites like that. By the end of the year, it's pretty well within a few sold roughly about 4 million units just with pre-orders alone.
So wow.
This is pretty well going to be the e-reader sort of going into the holidays. And you get your traditional Amazon experience, copious amount of books, hardware very fluid. And Amazon actually admitted that it's selling the hardware at cost in order to offer it for as low of a price point as it possibly can, because they know that once you buy it, you're pretty well locked into the Amazon ecosystem.
Yeah. Now, Amazon, you know, when I talk about Apple's success, one of the things that I give Apple total credit for their success is iTunes. I think iTunes made all the difference in the world because it was the delivery platform for everything. And I think that Apple's success is inherently tied to iTunes. Amazon has a similar story, and it's an application or it's a service that I don't fully understand, but it's their WhisperNet service. Am I right to say that it could be the basis for a lot of Amazon's growth and their for how they move ahead in the market?
Yeah, I mean, WhisperNet encompasses a lot of things. For one, it's their wireless content delivery system. So if you purchase something from Amazon, it's automatically synced to your Android app, to your e-reader. It's stored in the cloud.
And it does this in a mobility form, even if you don't have an account, right? Even if you don't have 3G installed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. Now, and I'm hearing that WhisperNet goes beyond just syncing your books. Now that it's also that there's a way that you can marry it to your Audible account.
Yeah, for people that are not familiar with Audible, it's basically Amazon had purchased them a few years ago. They're the largest audiobook site in the world, where you have professional actors, professional narrators doing very popular books, or even kind of obscure books that maybe the actor might have an affinity towards. Gravity's Rainbow, for example, is sort of a book that may be obtuse for a lot of people, but there's a lot of synergy being built right now between Amazon and Audible, and this is very prevalent in the Amazon Kindle Fire, the HD models that they had just released, where they have two different things called immersion reading and whisper sync for voice.
Okay.
And I know, Steve, you love your audiobooks, right?
I do indeed.
So with the new technology that they have, where if you buy the ebook and audiobook version, now you have to buy them independently. There's no package bundles for savings. But what you can do is while you're listening to the audiobook, as you're reading, text is actually highlighted as the audiobook is playing.
Oh, and if I want to listen to my book while I'm off for a walk and then read the book in the evening when I get home, I pick it up exactly where I left off, right?
So exactly. So
that is brilliant.
If you start on, say, page one and you read to page 50 at night, and then you load up the Audible app on your Android phone or your iPhone or whatnot, you would actually start picking up on the audiobook version exactly
on
where
page
you
50.
Left off,
yeah,
on the ebook, and then you could jump right back into the ebook and it'll sync to where you left off on the audiobook.
That is sensational. I love that idea. Now they've got to get the pricing of the audiobooks more in line and allow people to buy a package to be able to get the media, to get it and listen to it or read it in whatever media they want. That's the next step.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this is all these new features just got implemented within about the last month with the new Kindle Fire line of tablets. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this technology goes forward and is refined even further.
Michael Kozlowski, he is the editor at goodereader.com. It is the definitive resource for all things e-reader and tablet. Mike, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me now online is Shelley Whitke. She is a freelance tech writer. She focuses on productivity and apps and the internet for people like Best Buy in the Vancouver province. But I noticed a terrific website that you run, Shelley, which is helping parents survive in this day and age.
Yes, I do.
Now, what's your parental situation? How many children do you have?
I have four.
You have?
Yeah.
How old are they?
I have 10, 9, almost 7, and 3.
When do you have time to write a blog?
Yeah, it's a little hard, but, I find time.
See, I can't mock you too much because I also have four. But one was a big surprise, a huge, massive, incredible surprise. So yeah. I really only lay claim to three of them, although I love them all equally, more or less.
Yeah, my fourth was a surprise, too. It usually is when it comes to four.
Yeah. Now, you also do an awful lot on Pinterest, which I still am not into the Pinterest thing. I've set up my Pinterest thing. I'm using it a little bit. I put my videos on Pinterest, but I haven't drunk the Pinterest Kool-Aid, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But you have.
I have. Yeah, it's actually, it's pretty much good for everything from crafts to recipes to decorating. It's awesome.
Is it sexist to say that it is a social networking medium that really tends to appeal to women more than men?
You know, I think that's true. And actually, I'm surprised when I see friends, because it's all linked up to Facebook and Twitter, mm-hmm. and I'm surprised when I see male friends joining Pinterest, and I think, why would you want to join that? But, you know, there are things on there that apply to males, but it's definitely mostly female.
Why?
I think that because it started with crafts and home decorating and recipes, and it kind of just blew up from there. So if you go onto your main page and you look at the people you follow, it's generally just that kind of stuff. So I never knew where men fall into that whole region, but it has to be somewhere. I just haven't discovered it yet.
So if you were talking to somebody that didn't know anything about Pinterest, how would you describe it to them?
I would probably say it's an online bulletin board. So okay. You just kind of grab pictures and post them. It would be like covering your walls with pictures of things that you really, really love, and anybody can look at it.
And I kind of try to do the same thing, except I say it's your fridge door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that too.
You know, it's kind of got all those things on it, all the things that you're supposed to. When I mentioned to you in the email inviting you on the show, I said, I want to talk about Pinterest, and you said that you have to be careful because you have a Pinterest problem.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people do.
So is it just that you waste a lot of time in it?
It is. It is a huge time waster. You can just get sucked into clicking and clicking and clicking for hours. And, it's kind of dangerous when you have things that you have to do and you have to be productive.
When you've got four kids.
Clicking. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, for you personally, what are the areas that it doesn't waste time but it edifies your life? What are the things that you get out of it?
Mostly the home decorating stuff, because I've been renovating my kitchen, and I was really at a loss. I could have spent hours in Home Depot, but I went on Pinterest and I narrowed it down really, really quickly, so I didn't even have to bother anybody.
When you say you narrowed it down, like the color schemes that you wanted, or what did you narrow down?
It was color schemes and tile and everything, and I just went on there. I said, I like that kitchen, and I was pretty much done. I don't have a whole lot of time to waste with stuff like that, so Pinterest really helped me there, that's for sure.
Okay, so you saw pictures of somebody that had posted mm-hmm. pictures of their kitchen, and then how did you proceed from that? Did you then take it to a contractor? Did you take it? How did you move ahead with it?
No, I took it. Yeah, actually, I did. I took it to the tile contractor when I saw the tile I liked. I just took it to the tile contractor with the backsplash. I found, I clicked on the link, and it came. Took me to a manufacturer, and I ordered that online and had it shipped. So, you know, stuff like that. It's just, it makes everything really, really simple. And I saw everything that I liked in one shot, and I was done.
Now, when you use it and it's not so good for you, when you kind of fall off the Pinterest bandwagon and start over-consuming, what are the things that you're looking at? Are you still looking at, when I ask this because when I look at Pinterest, when the only time I've wasted time is mm-hmm. in awkward family photos areas.
Yeah, <that's>
which I found absolutely hilarious. Hey, Art, you were actually in one of the pictures. It was in one of the awkward family photos. It's in Pinterest. I'll explain it to you later. He wasn't even paying attention. That's why I had to get him in. Sorry. When you are wasting time, what are you doing?
Usually, I think if I'm wasting time, it's recipes because I don't like to cook anyway. So I kind of just randomly click through there, and I've seen some really things that look really interesting and turn out really, really badly. So, you know, I think it's kind of hit or miss.
So, what's your advice? Is this something that you recommend your friends engage in, or do you warn them about it?
Probably a little bit of both. I've told them, because in the beginning of Pinterest, you couldn't even just join. You had to have an invitation.
You had to be invited. I waited for a week for my invitation.
Yeah.
I
was invited right away, so that was kind of nice.
That's because you're a woman, I think.
Yeah, so I, you know, half and half, I really, I've warned them, you know, you can join this and it'll be lots of fun, but, you know, I'm warning you that you're going to waste more time than you do on Facebook, and it's true. So, they know. Yeah,
so,
everybody.
So if you create a Pinterest, now you do this by creating different walls. You create a wall that's my home decorating, a wall that's my, is it called a wall? A called?
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah. I think it's the board.
Oh, board, sorry. Yep. And you create one that's my cooking ideas, and people do wish walls, places I want to go, or wish boards, places I want to go and things I want to do, gifts to get me, you know, mm-hmm. I see women who aren't married and aren't even dating with their wedding board up. You know, have things that they want in their wedding, which I kind of find slightly, kind of a little bit pathetic, actually.
Yeah, it's a little sad. Yeah,
a little needy. You know, mm-hmm. But when you put these things up, are they all about sharing with others, or is it an organizational tool for you?
I think it's more about sharing. I mean, I usually put up a lot of inspirational. You can find a lot of inspirational. Just images on the web, and I find that, you know, you share those, and then somebody will repin them, like 50 people will repin them and like them and stuff. And yeah, for me, it's more about sharing and less about, because I very rarely do I go back to my boards and say, okay, well, I had planned on doing this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
I like to share it, and then I kind of forget about it, and then I go back and find something else. So.
And then there is a whole class of people who are now making their a part of their living, a business, out of Pinterest, and how is that evolving? Is it mainly people that are selling crafting supplies or advice and stuff like that, or what are the business models?
I have a friend actually who uses Pinterest to showcase her her cake. She does really custom cake decorating for weddings, and then I have another friend that uses it for graphic design. So
it's an easy. It's like a blog site that's easier for them to put together.
It is, yeah. I think it reaches a lot of eyes really, really quickly.
So it's for the distribution than the actual assembly of your portfolio.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because she does custom Disney cakes, and I mean, she can get more traffic from Pinterest than almost anywhere else, including Facebook, mm-hmm. because people see the picture and click on it, and then she gets business from that. So.
And that's the sharing metaphor, right? Is if you see a picture you like of her cake, you mm-hmm. pin it then on your board, which causes your friends to see it, and they pin it on another board and another one. And that is the organic growth of communications.
Exactly. Yeah, it's getting eyeballs to, you know, what you're trying to sell, and Pinterest is really good for that.
Do you gauge your success of your ideas or the things that you share by how many times it gets repinned?
Oh, definitely.
So what's your biggest success so far?
I actually think it was some inspirational thing about writing, and I think I had like 60 repins or something. I thought, oh, that's pretty good, but it wasn't even my picture. It was just something I found. So, yeah, it definitely worked.
Because I think the Awkward Family Photos one got repinned like thousands of times.
Yeah, exactly. So it's hard, you know, to get like a massive amount of repins, but if you did, yeah, that would definitely be judging for your success.
It's the different badges of success on the internet. Yeah,
exactly.
Retweets and repins.
Exactly.
No. So give me the URL of your parenting site, Shelley.
It's www.survivemag.com.
Survivemag.com?
Yeah.
And that's all about parenting survival skills. You do a fair bit on Pinterest on it. You also write regularly for the Best Buy blog, which I also write for and I've noticed you in, and you do great work for, and you also do some stuff for the Vancouver Province.
I do.
Thanks so much, that's Shelley Woodkey.
Thank you.
And joining me now online, Julian Saunders, our go-to person for London drugs. Julian, how are you keeping, sir?
Oh, pretty good. How about you, Steve?
I'm doing well. Is winter hitting Saskatoon yet?
No, not quite. We're getting one last round of nice warm weather, so...
Yeah, it won't be long.
Get outside, belt less.
It won't be long. Get those gutters cleaned.
You got it.
I wanted to talk to you about Windows 8. It's coming down the pipe, and I have to admit, this is the first Windows release that I haven't paid as close attention to as I probably should. I think my life now is focused on mobility, on, you know, things like iOS 6 and the different mobility apps, and desktop apps are just kind of sliding by the wayside.
Well, Windows 8 is a really good in-between.
They've
been trying really hard to pull Windows 8 into the next step, and the whole idea with the Windows 8 modern interface is you don't have to worry about what your computer's up to or which device you're using. You can buy a tablet and a Windows 8 computer, sign into your account on both, and it will automatically synchronize your settings. Your files can even come through SkyDrive, so it makes it a very easy experience when you have different devices that you want to use.
Now, anybody who moves to the Windows 8 operating system for their desktop computer is going to have a real surprise. It's called the Metro interface, right? It's this tiled interface that we're seeing in the Windows phones.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, they changed the name from Metro to Modern, and the new interface is the first time they've eliminated the Start button. So instead of having a button in the bottom corner, they've gone to a bunch of tiles, they call them, live tiles that can update with information. So the idea is you turn on your computer, and it boots very, very quickly. They've done a lot of stuff in the background to make it a smooth experience on the tech side, and you turn your computer on, and right in front of you is the information you want to use. So if you want to see what your friends are up to on Facebook, it's one click away. If you want the latest news, there's tiles that will update as information comes through from whatever it might be. So you can have weather, news, and a whole bunch of other services there.
But what is different is the customization, feeling like you're kind of have the operating system open to you. That has completely gone by the wayside now.
It has, but it's all still there. The desktop is all is still an app that you can run. It's just a new it's a new way of thinking about it. So it's kind of like when we moved from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95. It was a bit of a change in how things were laid out, but the same control panel, the same settings. If you want to dial right in and get really nerdy about it, it's all there. It's just in a different place that's different to access, because they want to keep that kind of in the background, ready for you if you want to go for it. But it's not there staring at you in your face all the time for the regular everyday user.
What's your sense of the regular everyday user? Do you think they're going to want to? Do you think they're going to be happy not having the control over their system that way? Do you think they're going to be happy just kind of clicking on a big tile and going into a general area, or do you think that most of them are going to want to actually dive in? You know, see that familiar desktop interface.
Well, for the transition period where people will need software and things that'll catch up with the new modern interface, they will go back to the desktop every now and again, because not everything will have a tile. Some stuff you'll have to go back, like your accounting programs, and other stuff. So you basically have the best of both worlds, because they didn't just chop off the familiar interface and throw it away. It's just a click away in Windows 8. So it'll be a kind of an in between at first, but once you get used to the tiles, it's really, there's a few things that make it so slick that you don't want to give it up.
How much time do you think you're going to be spending over the next couple of weeks trying to explain this new interface to everybody from the store?
It's hard to kind of explain it without showing it.
Yeah.
Once it's in your hands, it's actually quite fun. It's because it's similar to how a smartphone works. It's not something that you have to think about. You just kind of look at it, read it over, and then think, what do you want to do? You don't have to think what the computer's up to. So it's ready for you to use instead of ready for you to think about how it's working.
And I think if there is an endorsement of the move to the mobility world, it's the most stodgy of the software companies, Microsoft, completely, completely revolutionizing their core product and making it look like it's a smartphone.
You got it.
The desktop computer. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Julian Saunders is our computer expert from London Drugs. If you want to take a look at Microsoft's new operating system, no better place to go than dropping in at your local London Drugs. Thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Steve.
And Art, I think we have run out of time for today, have we not?
That's it.
In that case, we'll see you next week right here on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.